Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
From ABC News, this is Perspective. I'm Derek Dennis. Coming up, the stage is set for the 2024 presidential election. It's all but certain it'll be a Biden-Trump rematch with Nikki Haley out.
I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that.
Ahead, how some voters feel about the choice they'll now have to make. A birth control pill without a prescription, the over-the-counter game changer that healthcare providers say will boost family planning.
Half of the more than 6 million pregnancies in the U.S. each year are unintended. And unintended pregnancy can have its own health risks.
More on O-Pill from our ABC News medical team, including when it'll hit store shelves. And challenge accepted, a drone and a Formula One race car.
Do you think that can keep up with me around the lap in an F1 car?
We're along for the test. Which one crosses the finish line first? All ahead on Perspective. Get ready for a political deja vu. President Biden up against former President Trump in the 2024 presidential election. That rematch now looking very likely after Trump's resounding Super Tuesday wins in state after state in the 15 Republican primary contests across the country.
We're going to make America great again, greater than ever before. Thank you very much. It's been a big night. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Trump's closest Republican challenger, Nikki Haley, winning just one state, Vermont, on Super Tuesday, making Trump the presumptive Republican presidential nominee when Nikki Haley suspended her campaign.
I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets.
But the decisive primary results for Trump don't tell the whole story. Exit polling showed the vast majority of Haley supporters have serious reservations about voting for Trump.
I don't want to vote for him again, and I don't want to vote for Joe Biden. Right now, it's kind of, I feel homeless.
Both the Trump and Biden camps are encouraging voters who may be indifferent to support them anyway, with Trump promising to make America great again, or, in the case of Biden, a promise to restore the soul of America, which he talked about in his State of the Union address.
I see a future where defending democracy, you don't diminish it. I see a future where we restore the right to choose and protect our freedoms, not take them away.
ABC News has a team covering the state of the race, the reservations some voters have, and what's to come on the campaign trail later this year. ABC's Diane Macedo spoke to correspondents John Santucci, Catherine Falders, and Alex Perche about it all.
Well, essentially, they don't have a home right now, and their votes are going to be up for grabs. I can tell you, we've tailed the Haley campaign in a number of states, and while many of them have appreciated her policies and resonated with her policies, I think her message as being an alternative to former President Trump is something that most of them, just anecdotally, have really sort of gravitated towards. There's been a lot of talk from the GOP about bringing the party together and having some sort of unity, all unifying behind a one nominee. Come November to beat Biden, but there's a lot of work left to be done on that front to bring everyone under what now appears to be a Trump tent.
Catherine, Trump's campaign says they're already focused on the general election. So what can we expect to see there now?
I think it's important to focus on this message of unity that Trump is trying to present here. While he's saying that he wants to unify the Republican Party, at the same time as polls were closing, he's still essentially name-called Nikki Haley, calling her crazy, saying she's gone haywire, for example. So it'll be interesting to see how that message of unity translates to the general election here.
John, at one point, it looked like Nikki Haley had the momentum to go the distance here. Mm-hmm. She got some big endorsements. She was climbing in the polls.
Yep.
What went wrong?
Too little, too late. I think that Nikki Haley had an option. She could have gone hard against Donald Trump. She started to, but the problem is that that car should have been much further down the road and it just didn't get there in time. So if the voters wanted an alternative, which some appeared to, right? Look at the exit polling data that came out now from multiple states. Some have said they don't think Donald Trump is fit for office. Some have said that if Donald Trump is convicted of a crime, they can't see themselves voting for him. So Nikki Haley had options and ways to get there. She just didn't take them. Now we need to see what's going to happen next, because the reality is Donald Trump does need some of those Nikki Haley supporters, because those are the moderate Republicans and independents that feel that both Donald Trump and Joe Biden are too old.
Catherine, how is President Biden responding to Trump becoming the presumed nominee?
Well, we saw memos from the Biden campaign saying that they don't believe that Trump will be able to pick up those moderate voters that flocked to Haley. Of course, that remains to be seen. What the Biden campaign is saying is that they're going to be expanding their map. They're doing additional voter outreach. They're going to pick up more voters. But of course, this comes as the polls are showing Biden and Trump in a pretty tight general election contest.
Alex, Haley's not expected to endorse anyone immediately. She did recently hint, though, that she might break her pledge to support the Republican nominee. So what are you hearing on that?
Yeah, she did that in an interview. She said that, you know, she might not uphold that pledge, primarily because she didn't think that if Donald Trump was in the same position that he would necessarily follow through. Also, the campaign was out with a statement. They said there remains a large block of Republican primary voters who are expressing deep concerns about Donald Trump. That is not the unity our party needs for success. So it seems like, you know, the off-ramp for Haley has been transitioning to representing something and hoping that that kind of sways some of the policies that now the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party institutes.
So, John, I want to take that point to you, because if you have Republican voters expressing concerns about Donald Trump, now the presumptive nominee,
yep,
you've got a lot of Democrats expressing concerns about President Biden's,
yep,
age. How do they now get people out to the polls for this general election?
Well, so a couple problems, first of all. Donald Trump is going to be strapped into a courtroom for several weeks, because that's the reality of what's coming his way. And that hits right into the exit polling, right? If he's convicted of a crime. That very well could happen. This trial in Manhattan is slated to start in the next couple of weeks. He can't be on the campaign trail. The schedule for the trial is really weird. And what I mean by that, most courts typically don't sit on a Friday. This court's not sitting on a Wednesday. Most people don't campaign on a Wednesday because me and you, most of America, we're working on Wednesdays. It's going to make it really hard to get that message out there. Now, what I think they need to hit on are the issues, and I think you see this in Donald Trump's rhetoric. The border, oh, and the border. That's what Donald Trump has to hit on. And Joe Biden has to hit on trying to convince people the economy is better. Most people don't feel that, because the way people feel it is, how does it affect me in my everyday life? We both have kids. We both go to grocery stores, right? Like, you see the way prices have gone up. That is a very hard message for Democrats to fix. They have to find a way to convince people the overall picture is better.
That's ABC's John Santucci, Alex Preshay, and Catherine Falders speaking to Diane Macedo. The presidential election is set for November 5th. Coming up, a pharmaceutical first, birth control pills, over-the-counter, the benefits versus the risk. On Perspective, after this.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Perspective from ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. Birth control pills have been around since the 1960s, but now, for the first time in history, the Food and Drug Administration has approved an over-the-counter option. Opill has been available for years with a prescription, but it's set to hit pharmacy shelves later this month. ABC's Brad Milkey on our daily news podcast, Start Here, got some questions answered from ABC's Sony Salzman, a producer for our medical team.
How significant is this announcement?
Brad, this is a really big deal. And the reason that it's a big deal is because this is the first time that an over-the-counter birth control product will be available in the United States. And right now, birth control is available, like many medications, with a prescription from a doctor or a medical professional that can write a prescription. And there are reasons for that, but that, frankly, creates a barrier for a lot of people. And so the idea here is that by making this medication available over the counter, it will be easier for people to get, and that many more people will be able to start taking birth control. So the idea is to expand access here and expand access dramatically.
And so this is like, it's the pill. Like when people talk about taking the pill, this is what it is, and yet now it's available without the prescription. You take it the same way.
So basically, Opill is a progestin-only birth control. And what that does is it works in several ways to prevent pregnancy. One of the ways is that it thickens the lining in the cervix. The other way is that it stops ovulation. So it's working in multiple ways to prevent pregnancy. And when taken consistently, progestin-only birth control, like other forms of oral birth control, is kind of in the high 90s percent effective. So 98% when you take it at the same time every day.
And so now, once this becomes available in stores, like who can buy it? Anyone?
Yeah, so it's going to be available in stores. It's going to be $20 a month. If you buy a few months in advance, then, you know, it's a little bit of a discount. And, you know, anyone can buy it. Now, of course, there are certain people who shouldn't buy it. People who've had breast cancer or really any type of cancer should be talking to their doctor. People with kind of these medical concerns, right, that would make them potentially more high risk. But you will be able to just buy it, kind of like you do with any over-the-counter product.
And so with that all in mind, Sonia, I mean, are there safety risks here? Because I assume, like, that's why women needed to have prescriptions all these years, was you do want a doctor to spot any potential complications, right? But overall, you're saying that the public health benefit sounds like it's going to be much greater than the risk.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the determination that the FDA was grappling with when they were deciding whether to approve this as an over-the-counter medication. And, you know, just some numbers here, almost half of the more than 6 million pregnancies in the U.S. each year are unintended. Mm. And unintended pregnancy can have its own health risks. There's a higher risk of premature birth, and then there's, you know, risks of child health outcomes being worse. So, you know, this is a really heavy decision, right? But again, what the real determination here that the FDA was making is, do consumers know how to read the label? Are they familiar enough with this product? The first birth control product was approved in the United States in the 1960s. So American consumers have decades of, you know, using birth control products, using oral contraception. And what the FDA determined in the data that was brought forward is that they have a good understanding of how to take this safely. What are some of the things to watch out for? When to reach out to that healthcare professional, you know, and when you're having an issue. So that was kind of the determination here.
Medical producer Sonny Salzman with ABC's Brad Milkey on our daily news podcast, Start Here. For Americans who are planning families now, an alarming reality for many mothers who conceive and carry their babies to term. A new study shows a worsening epidemic of infant mortality in the U.S., affecting communities of color more than any other. ABC News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Jennifer Ashton explains.
Part of the way we judge a society's healthcare system and medical system is how we take care of women and children. And in this country, we are failing both of those populations and have been basically for 20 years, depending on what data set you're looking at. This latest piece of information was a study done by the CDC, looked at 11 million live births in this country around 2019 to 2021, and found the infant mortality rates, A, much higher than they should be, number one. B, fell out, not a surprise, based on race differently and based on socioeconomic status differently, with Black babies having the highest infant mortality rate, Hispanic babies somewhere in the middle, Asian babies at the lowest end. They did the best in terms of survival and risk of death. Women who were on Medicaid coverage also had the highest rate of infant mortality, and women who participated in WIC programs, an assistance program for food, also had very high rates of mortality. So we have quite literally the neediest populations directly translated to the highest risk of infant death.
ABC News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Jennifer Ashton. Cotton, It's been a symbol of America's original sin tied to slavery and racism. But one cotton farmer in North Carolina says he wants to rewrite that stigma and turn cotton from a symbol of oppression to a symbol of opportunity. But how? ABC Steve Osunsami has his story.
There's an unmistakable beauty to the snow-white cotton fields that blanket parts of the South in the fall. It's nature's notice, really, that shorter days are coming and that farmers will need to work longer nights harvesting what's arguably the most popular material in the world.
A family speaking out after students were asked to clean cotton in class.
But for many Americans, there's little poetry in cotton.
My children, under no circumstance, I'm so sorry, need to be taught what it's like to be a slave or what it's like to be black.
And for many black Americans in particular, there's a racism to the idea of picking it. For example, parents were more than offended in Spokane, Washington, when a fifth grade teacher passed around a box of cotton during a history lesson and told her students to pick it clean. And calling someone a cotton picker can seem very much a slur.
That made me feel like I didn't like know that they actually thought of me that way.
You know, that's work, but not the hardest work you can do.
37-year-old Julius Tillery is trying to take the bad word out of what it means for black people to pick cotton in America.
There's not many of us. We're basically extinct.
Extinct.
There's less than 100 black cotton farmers in the whole country.
He'll tell you that he's a cotton picker who owns hundreds of acres in North Carolina, has an economics degree, and is teaching black farmers across the South how to survive in a global economy.
If I don't create a new history for us, it will always be a bad history. So I think it's really important that the work I do to help foster a better ideal around cotton is important.
He's created a side business he calls Black Cotton, where he sells jewelry, home accessories, and has partnered with the people who make Vans shoes to create streetwear. 2 years ago, Vans bought 10,000 pounds of his cotton. This year, they tell us they're buying twice as much. The shirts they sell come with a logo that Julius Tillery calls the New Rose.
Black cotton is the New Rose.
The New Rose.
We gotta remember, this is American cotton. This is black cotton. This is special cotton. Our catchphrase is cotton is our culture. Let's grow together. We want to bring people into this and have everyone have a feeling around it that's positive.
You're trying to change the brand of cotton within black culture.
Absolutely. Like on the internet, people call me the Puff Daddy of cotton, and I think that's cool.
He's trying to improve on the history of cotton that in America is very much tied to that old idea that black people should be owned. In the movies like 12 Years a Slave, just the picture of black Americans working on those endless cotton farms feels as ugly as can be.
I'm a fifth generation cotton farmer, and we emphasize that because that means five generations of free men decided to do this work. And you know, us that live close to cotton fields, we know that cotton is not here to hurt us. But I've seen people all across the country reach to me and say, how could you do this? So much hurt around. And I'm like, have you been in the field? Like, I had a rapper from Atlanta come, and he shot a video at my farm.
This is Tillery, seen here in that video, in a song by artist King David Wilson.
After the video, we say a prayer together, and he began to cry. And I hugged him. I said, what's wrong, brother? And he said, this is the freest I've ever felt as a black man.
What is it? How do you explain to people that people need to flip that script?
Well, we have to remember, cotton was the oppressive thing. Cotton is just a plant, and it's a magical plant at that. It was people that was oppressive and made us work like we was machines. However, this is a new day. No one's making me do this work. No one's pressing me to do any of this work. So I had to decide to change my perspective on this. It's actually something to be proud of.
In today's world, it's all about marketing the product that you raise.
Mm-hmm. He's taking over the business from his father, and buried on their farm is the former slave in the family who was forced to work in these fields before buying the land as a free man more than 100 years ago.
That's here, and it made me always feel like I had to protect this area.
Julius Tillery says today, people need to see the pride in what he does, and not just the pain.
Everything's intentional. We're here because of cotton in many ways. We just gotta not take it for granted.
It's so important, and it comes from this little plant.
ABC's Steve Osunsami reporting. Coming up, on your mark, get set, go. Who wins when a race car goes up against a drone? On Perspective, after this. From ABC News, this is Perspective. I'm Derek Dennis. Coming up, history made this Women's History Month. College basketball phenom Caitlin Clark breaking both women's and men's records. But first, the popularity and use of drones has exploded in recent years, giving enthusiasts a bird's eye view to take pictures and video of all kinds. But how about putting a drone to the test against a race car to see which one moves faster? ABC's Rob Hawley has the story with one eye on the sky and the other on the track.
Formula One world champion Max Verstappen is a tough man to catch.
It's been brilliant from Verstappen.
He opened this season right where he left off last year.
The defending champion on top here in Bahrain. He wins the Bahrain Grand Prix and he won it with ease.
The call on ESPN. So if some of the best drivers and fastest cars in the world can't even keep up with him, what hope does anything really have?
Do you think that can keep up with me around the lap in an F1 car?
The that he's talking about is this. A drone. A fast one. The challenge, laid out in a video put out by Verstappen's team, Red Bull, build a drone, but not just any drone.
Their idea was to start this project, like, okay, we need a drone that can keep up with the Formula One car, but mostly to make a cool shot of the car for a full lap at full speed.
Ralph Hogenberg is co-founder of the group Dutch Drone Gods, called in to meet that challenge.
They've been, you know, filming Formula One cars for a long time. They tried it with normal drones and FPV drones, race drones, and nothing could keep up.
And he tells ABC News this was the work of a year. Job one, build one that can accelerate like an F1 car. Then it was drag race time. Mission accomplished, getting up to about 200 miles per hour. Smoking a Red Bull car driven by former F1 pro David Coulthard.
There's a small issue. These cars aren't really made for this type of competition.
Because yes, F1 cars are fast in a straight line, but really fast in turns. So it's back to the drawing board to find new ways to get more speed and better handling.
The whole frame and the shape and the materials around it, that's very much fully designed by us and manufactured partly by us, partly by Red Bull. So yeah, it's not a drone you can just buy off the shelf.
Hogenberg says they came up with a drone that looks and flies like a bullet.
Slowing it down is a big problem because this rocket-shaped kind of drone we have, it doesn't have a brake. If I keep pointing forward, it will just keep going forward even though I'm not putting any power into it anymore. So yeah, we'd have to adjust like our way of flying.
So literally they're turning this thing through 180 degrees and flying it backwards to slow it down.
Rob Gray is the technical director at Red Bull Advanced Technologies.
And so hence why when you get to the end of the straight, the camera, which is fixed on the drone, turns around and is still looking at the car. Now that's really because the drone's kind of almost overshooting slightly. And that's the most efficient way for it to brake.
Gray's team, adding their expertise after the second iteration of the drone, managed to chase Red Bull driver Liam Lawson around the iconic Silverstone circuit.
Now you actually get an idea of how fast you're going by everything.
But for the final test, following reigning world champion Max Verstappen around the track, they needed even more. That's when Red Bull Advanced Technologies was tapped to step up the performance, and the fastest way to do that? Cut weight.
So we took the upper body work we made out of a composite material, but not a carbon. And then the lower part was made out of a carbon fiber.
Those changes, dropping up to 10% of the drone's weight.
You save weight, it accelerates faster, it brakes faster, it's more maneuverable. It really is a win-win-win.
All leading up to this moment, Ralph and his drone versus Max and his car.
So do you think you can keep up with me for a full lap?
Yes, I was nervous, but once I put the goggles on and I start flying, I just focus on what I'm doing.
What he was doing was keeping up with Verstappen. Every turn, every braking point, every acceleration. And getting a unique view of Verstappen pushing his car to the limits.
I was actually commenting during my flight, like, whoa, he's drifting.
Challenge accepted and challenge met for what is now the world's fastest camera drone. The next step, the hope, to someday use it in TV broadcasts of F1 races. Reporting for Perspective, Rob Hawley, ABC News.
March is Women's History Month, and one young woman is making history all on her own. Caitlin Clark, taking college basketball by storm, shattering both the women's and men's NCAA all-time scoring records. In fact, the game where she broke the men's record attracted more than 4 million TV viewers, the highest for a women's regular season basketball game since 1999.
People love the long shots. People love the good passing. People love the fire. And that's something I've always had in my game ever since I was 7 years old.
Caitlin Clark speaking to ABC News. The Iowa guard is taking her talents to the pros, entering the WNBA draft. Stephanie White, head coach of the Connecticut Sun, and ABC News contributor Christine Brennan talk to ABC's Kira Phillips on the Caitlin Clark effect.
Ladies, it is so great to have you on this day. And, you know, Stephanie, you have been watching Caitlin play for years, and I think we all knew that she would make history. But how did it feel as a woman, a former college and WNBA player, and now a pro coach, just to witness that moment, Steph?
It was exciting. Everybody was on the edge of their seat just waiting for the moment that it was going to happen. You know, bets on how she was going to score the basket. I mean, it was just really has been an incredible moment, not just for women's basketball, but for sport in general. I'm not sure that any single record has captivated really an audience the way that Caitlin Clark has captured the basketball world.
Let's just talk about Pistol Pete for a minute, and now Ponytail Pete, and why Caitlin's achievement here is just so remarkable.
Well, I'm old enough to remember Pistol Pete as a girl growing up, and he was extraordinary, and it was fun to watch. And what Stephanie was saying, you know, just the joy that Caitlin plays with, well, that was Pistol Pete too. But also, we have been introducing a new generation or two of people and athletes and sports fans to this man, Pete Maravich. Caitlin Clark has given us that opportunity to get to know Pistol Pete for those who didn't, and that's most of the, you know, vast majority of our country. So this is a win-win in every way, and such a great moment, not just for basketball, but throughout sports, to show what Title IX has done now nearly 52 years into that fabulous law being signed and enacted in our nation.
And Stephanie, Caitlin isn't just great for women's basketball. She is great for the entire game. She's more than just points.
She absolutely is. I mean, let's not forget, this is a young woman who led the nation in assists as well. She's accomplished records that haven't ever been accomplished in the sport of collegiate basketball. To Christine's point as well, she's bringing recognition to the pioneers of the women's game that are introduced to a whole new generation of players, the Lynette Woodards, the Annie Myers, the Nancy Liebermans, the Lucy Harrises, those who we're standing on their shoulders right now. And Caitlin Clark is just at the epitome of the intersection of social media, of pop culture, and fan engagement in a way that we've never seen. And she's moving the needle forward for all athletes.
So let me ask you this, Stephanie, as a WNBA coach, is it intimidating to coach a player like that? I know we've never seen a woman play like this before, but kind of put me in that mindset. Or do you get excited about a player like this because you both can learn from each other?
No, you get excited about a player like this. I mean, she challenges everything in you in a coach and ways to position her for success at the next level. I mean, she's going to go and play against the best players in the world. And the thing that you most love as a coach about Caitlin Clark is her humility, her ability to be coachable. She wants to be challenged. She wants to be pushed. And you can tell that in every interview that she does, in every practice that you go to. She's just the epitome of what it means to be a great teammate and a great player.
That's Connecticut Sun head coach Stephanie White and ABC News contributor Christine Brennan talking to Kira Phillips. Coming up, it's the viral TikTok story just about everybody's talking about, asking the question, who, bleep bleep, did I marry? ABC's Robin Roberts has a candid conversation with the woman at the center of the series and the happy ending to it all on Perspective after this. You're listening to Perspective from ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis. There's a TikTok story it seems the whole country and beyond is talking about. A 50-part, 8-hour-long first-person tale of love, marriage, deception, and divorce titled, Who, bleep bleep, did I marry? It's told by a woman who goes by the nickname Risa Tisa, and she talks about her ex, whom she calls Legion, and how she says he lied to her for months about everything, from his finances to his family, his so-called career as an arena football player, to his phone conversations that she says were all made up. But in his own social media posts, Legion denies lying and says he left Risa Tisa for cheating. ABC's Robin Roberts sat down with the unintended TikTok star on why she aired her dirty laundry and how she missed so many red flags.
With just one question, she had the internet hooked.
Who did I marry?
In her 50-part TikTok series, Teresa Johnson, now widely known on social media as Risa Tisa, details her whirlwind pandemic romance that she says was filled with love, heartbreak, and alleged deception.
I'm going to tell the story of how I met, dated, married, and divorced a real pathological liar.
The viral saga has garnered more than 400 million views and counting.
Were you nervous at all about sharing?
Yes, I was nervous, but ultimately, I decided if you're going to tell this story, tell the whole story. Mm-hmm. I also really truly believe the story will help somebody. It costs you nothing to verify, but it very well may cost you everything to not verify.
The narrative spread out over an 8-hour-long TikTok playlist.
Part one, how'd y'all meet?
So we actually met on Facebook dating.
And we also matched on Hinge. I did not realize that he was on both under two different names.
There are a lot of things in this story that were red flags. This was probably one of them, but we thought it was hilarious that we matched on two different sites. This was a guy who I really, after having multiple conversations with, felt like, wow, you know, where have you been?
Within 2 weeks, she says the couple decided to quarantine together in her Atlanta home.
It was more of a very temporary, he's coming to stay for the lockdown. The lockdown just never ended.
Teresa says Legion told her he had substantial savings from his time playing arena football and quickly took over paying her household bills.
Part of the reason that you stayed, was there anything to do with the fact that he said he had money or you thought that he had money?
I definitely was not with him for the money, but I will admit that there came a point he was paying all the bills and he was being, as he called, a provider. And I had never in my life experienced that before. Mm. I really felt like, oh, thank you, Jesus. Like, I can just exhale. Yes, that felt good.
Teresa also says he made promises to buy her things, including a luxury car, a house, and a trip to London.
What were you thinking when he was making all of these promises and when they weren't happening?
We're touring houses. I physically saw him put an offer in on a house. It is unfathomable to see someone put an offer in and they have no money. So my mind was kind of saying, okay, something isn't right, but you know what you saw.
In the series, Teresa explains why she continuously chose to overlook what she calls the United Nations of red flags.
I didn't want to look stupid by having the relationship end so quickly for everyone to be like, we told you something was up. And number three, I was ready to get married.
I felt like time was running out. I ignored things because I really wanted it to be my turn.
You get pregnant and unfortunately you lose the baby.
That is where I say the relationship should have ended. Instead, the miscarriage almost pushed me to hold on to him even more.
Teresa claims after they got married, she started uncovering an elaborate web of lies.
The question isn't what all did he lie about? The question definitely became, okay, what is actually true? What can you prove?
What was the most painful part?
The part that still makes me, that I struggle with, is you pretended to be your own executive assistant when I was texting you to say I'm in pre-op. So there was never an executive assistant. You were never in a meeting. You just simply did not take me to the hospital when I lost our child.
Teresa says she discovered he had a criminal record, documents revealing Legion pled guilty to charges of impersonating a police officer in 2017, and even had an open warrant for violating probation. After just 6 months of marriage, Teresa and Legion divorced.
It was as if a year worth of weight came off of me. I broke down, and I mean, I wailed.
I heard you say that you're not who you were before all this happened. Do you miss her?
I do. She got excited. I don't really get excited anymore. I am terrified to get excited because I went through a whole year and some change of getting excited only for it to be stripped away. I do still believe in love. I do still believe in marriage. I do still want that. Being single is not always a great thing, but being married to the wrong person is a completely different type of hell.
Why do you think this, you, your story, has resonated with so many people?
I do think being accountable, people appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I have nothing wrong with asking for grace if I'm going to be honest and say, this is where I messed up. I know I messed up. I'm gonna be honest, I really had to kind of repent. Like, I had to really ask God to forgive me because I believe that God did everything to stop me. And my hard-headed self was still like, that's not a red flag. That's more pink. That was more pink, you know.
Teresa says even though recording the series was cathartic, therapy has been key.
It is still very much a journey of healing, self-reflection, and simply loving myself way more than to put myself through that or anything even like that ever again, ever.
TikTok storyteller Risa Tisa speaking with ABC's Robin Roberts. One more lie Risa Tisa says Legion told her was his intention to take her to her dream destination, Paris. Yes, she says that was a lie too. Risa's ex, Legion, denies lying and says he left Risa Tisa for cheating. But in a follow-up post, Chapter 51, A Happy Ending, Risa Tisa reveals she's now able to go to Paris and London on her own and is asking for recommendations on where to stay, what to eat, and what to see as a single woman again with so many lessons learned. Before we go, California has been given a huge gift from Mother Nature. Several big winter storms have slammed parts of the state in recent weeks, but there's an upside. All the rain, and in some areas, the heavy snowpack, means there's enough water runoff to effectively end California's drought for now and secure the state's water supply for at least the next 2 years.
That gives us confidence that water is not going to be a scarce issue here in the short term in California.
That's AccuWeather Chief Meteorologist Jonathan Porter. He says on January 1st, the California snowpack was at 28% of average. It's now at 104% of average. The downside? Plenty of water also means fertile soil for trees and other vegetation to grow that can quickly dry out and make for the perfect fuel for wildfires.
And especially at times when we're dealing with any kind of gusty wind, there's still going to be a risk for some wildfires. Every drop of water is so precious in California, and that's going to continue to be the case whether there's widespread drought or not.
So weather experts say while California may be watered down now, residents still need to conserve as much as they can for whatever Mother Nature brings next. From ABC News, this has been Perspective. Thanks for listening. This show is produced by Aaron Ferrer, Marwa Muwaki, and Joy Piazza. If you want to listen to any of our past shows, subscribe to the Perspective podcast. Give us a review. If you've got the time, tell us what you'd like to hear in the future and what you think. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find Perspective and other ABC News shows at abcaudio.com/podcasts. For ABC News, I'm Derek Dennis.